Coming to the end of Shin Zion. We were in Sif Chof Beis. Maybe just run through that again. Bezras Hashem, we'll finish off Shin Zion and just do the Hakdama of the Mishnah Brura in Hilchas Muksa. So we said last week on Thursday, Kol Shvus Derabon on Mutter Bein Ashmoshes Letzorich Mitzvah. Now, Bein Ashmoshes is a time. Bein Ashmoshes is a time between Shkia and Nach. And in such a time, says the Shulchan Aruch, it's mutter to do a shvus, which is a iser derabbanon. If a lady forgot to light candles, and it's already shkia, she can ask a non-Jew to light the candles. Oh, im hayu torud v'husrich la'aseh bein hashmoshes. Or if he was busy erev Shabbos and he forgot to take trumas and maisras, since taking trumas and maisras is only an iser derabbanon, and you won't have your fruit to eat on Shabbos, then you can take Trumas and Maizras. Well, we mentioned, though, that elsewhere, I think in Reish Samach Aleph, the Mishnah Berurah says that this does not apply to somebody who already has been Mekabel Shabbos. This only applies to Shkia, and you haven't accepted upon yourself Shabbos. Really, there's a mitzvah to Sefer Shabbos. It's actually an important thing to note, that there's a mitzvah, according to most poskim, of Tosefes Shabbos, to be Mekabel Shabbos. Now, if you come to a regular shul, let's say Kol Yaakov, let's say they daven Mincha 14 minutes before Nach, then it's very unlikely, if you just rely on Mizmor Shir Yom HaShabbos to Mekabel Shabbos, that you will fulfill the mitzvah of Tosefes Shabbos by accepting Shabbos upon yourself. There's a mitzvah to be Mekabel Shabbos before Shkia. So, if a person didn't be Mekabel Shabbos for whatever reason, and it comes to Bein Hashmoshes, then this heter applies of asking a non-Jew to do a melacha for you. But otherwise, it doesn't really apply properly. Okay, so that is that. Next, let's carry on in the Ramah. Kol davar she'asa loyma le'eni Yehudi la'asoso v'Shabbos, asa lirmos lo la'asoso, aval mutter lirmos lo la'asos melacha acha Shabbos. Says the Ramah that not only are you not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do melacha for you on Shabbos, you can't just say to a non-Jew, put the air conditioning on. You can't even hint to the non-Jew to put the air conditioning on. Says the Shulchan, says the Mishnah Berurah in Sif Katan Ayin Vav, the Gamzehu Bichlal Amir Eleinu Yehudi, hinting to a non-Jew is the same as saying to a non-Jew. Now, we explain this on Thursday as meaning that there's two aspects to Amir El Akam. There's actually many aspects, Amir El Akam. But one aspect is the Dibur, that you're talking about Melacha, the Daber Dover, and that surely doesn't apply to Remez. But there's another aspect called Shlichas, that if a non-Jew starts doing melacha for you and it's understood he's doing it for you, then he's like your shliach to do the melacha. So if you hint to him, then it's like your shliach. So the Mishnah Berurah says it's the same thing. It's amir l'akam. To hint to him is amir l'akam. Kivin sha'al yidei remizasa osa b'shabbos. V'hu adin sha'asa loymalo b'shabbos ezedover shi'ovim mitoch kach shi'asa melacha. So now the Mishnah Berurah gets a little bit more particular, and he starts highlighting important points. He says that it's also to be meramez in a way that he understands from your hint that you are asking him to do a melacha, meaning the hint is the same as asking him. Now he gives an old-fashioned moshel. He says in the olden days, well, it was his time, but you had a candle, and the candle would get, on the wick, would get full of soot, the black stuff at the top, and it would apparently affected the way it burnt. So if you could knock off some of that black stuff, the soot at the top, it would light better. Okay, so let's say you've got a non-Jew around and your candle's not lighting properly. So you say to the non-Jew, they had this hint. It doesn't translate very well in English, but you say to the non-Jew, can you wipe its nose? And the non-Jew understood that he meant, can you remove the top part of the soot? Yeah? No, it stays light whilst you're doing it. Because You just get rid of the sut at the top, it stays alight. This is a problem of kibbuy, or perhaps havora, because you're making it light better. Or both. So, alkein osa lomar, leini hudishi kanachotmo, it's also to say wipe its nose, kidei shiovin shiyose hapechem shibarosh haner. Now, here's an important point. Says the Mishnah Berurah, but when you are hinting to the non-Jew, shaloi bilshon tzivoy, meaning there's no impression from the hint that there's a tzivoy attached. Going, sh'omah haneh einu meya yofa. You say, the light isn't bright enough. Right? You don't say something like, I can't see in the dark, it's too dark for me to see. You have to make it that it's not like you are instructing him. So you just say it's not bright enough in here. And he understands that what you want him to do. Oh, says the Mishnah, Eini yochol likros lohaner hazeh shiyesh bo pechem. Or you say, I can't read by this candle, the candle's too dim. And he understands that you want him to make it brighter. And he understands, and it's permissible. This is not called amira l'okam. So, if you hint in a way that there's not implied a tzivoy, like can you wipe its nose or something, or it'd be really nice if the air conditioning was on, right? You shouldn't say things that imply what you want him to do, but you say like a shlilis. Like in a negative way, it's hot in this room, and he then says to you, so would you like me to put the air conditioning on? Don't say yes. You say it's really hot in the room again, and he starts to get the idea what you're saying, but you mustn't say any hint that implies that you're asking him to do it. Actually, we'll come back to the air conditioning in a second. Why that's not so good. Now, the Mishnah Berurah brings out the third point. We said there's such a thing called Daber Dover. There's such a thing called Shlichas. But there's also something called Nana. You're not allowed to benefit from the Malacha of a non-Jew. Even if you never hinted to him, even if you have no connection with him, even if he just does it on his own account for you, you cannot benefit from the Malacha of a non-Jew on Shabbos when it's done for the intention of a Jew. So if a non-Jew, of all his goodwill, wants to help Jews out, and starts doing lots of malachas for them on Shabbos, you can't benefit from that on Shabbos. So how do you understand the case of the ner? How can you benefit from the ner? So the Mishnah Berurah says, "V'ein le'asar mitam shenerna mimelacha she'asah ha'ini yudi b'shvilei, de'ein zeh hanor kalkach, de'gam mikodem ha'yochol al pi hatachak likros la'oro." A big idea here is that you couldn't see properly, you could see a little bit. Or you couldn't read enough, but if you would put the book right next to the candle, you'd be able to see. So there was something going on. And therefore, when the non-Jew does a malacha for you, he's not giving you yesh me'ayin. He's not giving you nothing. He's not giving you something from nothing. You were able to do it a little bit beforehand, and now he's improved to make your life more easier. That you can benefit from. But if something is impossible, and he then lights the match and lights a fire for you, and because of that you can see, then it's also to benefit from it. So if you go back to the air conditioning case, and because it's on and it's the summer coming up, so then whether you can, if a non-Jew would put an air conditioning machine on for you, on the assumption it's not, on the assumption there's a malacha involved in all this, but let's say it is a malacha and the non-Jew is doing a malacha for you, then if the room was tolerable for you to stay in beforehand, he's just making it a bit more comfortable for you, then that's fine, you can stay in the room. But if the room was intolerable and you couldn't stay in the room, it was just too hot and you were about to walk out, and then the non-Jew puts the air conditioning, and because of that it's tolerable to stay in, then you're not allowed to benefit from that on Shabbos. Okay, any questions on that? Okay. Yeah, but it makes a big difference, because if a non-Jew turns a light off for you or extinguishes something for you, then that's not, you can never benefit from that. You are never benefiting, because it's the lack of light which you're benefiting from. So you can only say you're benefiting from a non-Jew who lights for you.
Can you say
Mefurosh? No, you can't say Mefurosh. You still have to hint because of the other problem of Amira L'Akam. There's always Amira L'Akam, and being benefiting from the outcome. So while if he turns the light off for you, you are not nana from it, but you are getting him to do a malacha for you. And therefore, you have to hint. You have to say, it's too bright in here. You can't say, I can't sleep in here because it's too bright, probably, because that's already making an instruction. Now, if you remember, for those that were here on Thursday, you might remember, in Sif Yud Tes, we said that whenever you approach a non-Jew, and let's say you go out to the street, and you see a non-Jew, and you say, come, you know, there's a problem, I need you to see it. The Shulchan Aruch says that's already like instructing him to do it. So you can never tell a non-Jew, come inside, you know, you've got to see the situation. Because by doing that, you're already instructing him to do something. If you see a non-Jew in the street that you want to do something, you have to say the problem directly. Sorry, you have to say the problem indirectly, but you mustn't tell him to come into the house because there's a problem. You know, he'll hopefully understand and start following after you. But you can't tell him, come in, you know, there's a problem here. Okay, the Ramah then deals with another case. Einam Yehudim hamavim tavua b'shabbos liYisrael shechayovim lahem. A non-Jew, he has some sort of business arrangement with a Jew, and he brings the produce that he owes the Jew, and he turns upon Shabbos. Now, this non-Jew wants to put it in the storehouse, in the garage, but the storehouse is shut. So can the Jew give him the key and start opening up? And well, you give him the key, you're basically saying, go and carry it there. Okay, so can you do that? So the Ramah says you can. A Jew can actually give him the key for the storehouse. Then the non-Jew puts it down, and he does his measuring, and he does his counting. The heter is because it's Metoris Choshen Mishpat, that all the time the non-Jew hasn't measured how much he's giving the Jew, then the Jew doesn't own it yet. And it's like the halacha that we learned in Sif Chaf, that you're allowed to tell a non-Jew to do malacha with his own stuff on Shabbos. You can tell a non-Jew, go and cook your treif on Shabbos. There's no problem of a daber dover. You can tell a non-Jew. So too, if a non-Jew turns up with tavua, you can tell him, go and put it in the oat. So, you know, here's the key, go and deal with it as you like, because it's all his. So you have purchased the rights to tavor. You've bought, let's say, I don't know, 10 gallons of apples, right? Let's say wood. You're buying, you know, 10 kilograms of wood, okay? So now the non-Jew comes with his stack of wood. Now, you never made a kinyan on this wood. You did a kinyan kesef, but you haven't made a kinyan Mashiachah on it, you've not done a Hagbar on it, you've not done a Kinyan Chotzer on it, you've not acquired it in any way that a Jew acquires Metaltalin. So now, the non-Jew really owns it. And he is coming to your house, and he doesn't know, he's got 100, he's on a big delivery system, so he's going to go to you, and he's going to go to somebody else, so he's got all his wood. So now he comes into your garage and starts counting out how much wood he owes you. That's fine, because it's his. Once he puts it down and you've made a kinyan chotzer, then it becomes yours. But until that point, it's his, and you can basically tell him to put it where you like. This gets into shilas. Now, I don't have the answer clear exactly how it works, but, you know, with an Amazon delivery, which they seem to always come on Shabbos, as everybody knows. So now, this is the big shilas. What do you do? So it's not the same case as this, because in this case of the Ramah, we don't know how much there is. The goy comes with his tavua, tons and tons of it, and he has to start measuring it out, how much is yours. And so since there's this necessity to measure out, it's not yours yet. With an Amazon delivery, you know, there's one parcel, it's clearly marked for you, and you made a kinyan kesef on it, so seemingly it's shayach to you. Now, let's say it's a muksa item. Let's say you order the computer, whatever. It's muksa. So the non-Jew's got in his hand a computer. So you, the Mogen Avraham says you can tell the non-Jew to put it down because the halacha is by muksa, that if the Mogen Avraham at least holds, that if you pick up muksa for whatever reason, at least then you can put it in the place where you want it. Maybe you shouldn't have picked it up in the first place. But that's the Mogen Avraham Shita, that once you've got muksa in your hand, at least b'derech heta, then you can put it where you like. There's no need to just like drop it. You can put it where you like. So this non-Jew has in his hand your computer that you've ordered, so you can tell him where to put it. Mitores muksa, there's no problem, because even you could do that. But what my problem is, so I don't have the answer clear, but I'll just ma'ore the shayla, is that the Amazon delivery man is standing outside your house in a carmelis or rishus harabim. I mean, he's not in a rishus hayochid unless he's already in your porch. But unless there's no porch, he's already in rishus harabim or carmelis. Now, if you tell him, just put it down over there, you're basically telling him to do a malacha d'oraisa. Or at least a melacha derabbanon, if it's a carm, it's more likely to be a derabbanon because it's not like going to be a rishus harabim outside your house. But at least if you tell him to put it down, then you're telling him to do a melacha. Now, don't. If he's walked into your house, then he's in your house.
The biggest problem is if he's standing outside and.
Yeah, exactly. They usually. So if it's Ocado in the shopping, so then they come into your house and put the bags in. The Amazon delivery people usually don't come into your house.
Would you like to come in?
Not drop it wherever you... Drop it wherever you want.
Drop it somewhere else.
Drop it, that's cool, doing a malacha.
So invite him in, and then he can put it there.
Yeah, but the problem is, if you invite him in, he's also doing a malacha, but it could be better, because he's not no intention of a malacha. He's carrying by walking in with it.
He's not doing a halacha,
as soon as he stops, he's doing a halacha. Yeah, that's called Hanocha.
Just say to him, I've got a bad back, would you just come in
and drop it down and do a malacha of putting it down? No, so I don't know exactly how it works. We may say that you don't own it yet. If you don't own the item yet, it's like...
How do you argue that? It's hard to argue that with Amazon.
It's hard to argue that with Amazon because it's already direct, it's already dispatched, it's already got your name on.
What can you argue that?
With the case of the Ramad case, you could argue because that case hasn't been measured out yet, hasn't got your name on it. This piece of wood could be yours or his yet. But with the Amazon delivery, it's already got your name on it, already seemingly belonging to you. Now, I don't know the legalities of it. You know, if there's a fire in the delivery truck and the truck blows up, you know, who's got the onus? You know, does Amazon say, well, it was your stuff, you know, tough luck on you? Or do they say, no, we'll replace it? You know, if they have to replace it, then it seemingly still belongs to them. If they say, tough luck, you know, go and deal with your insurance company, then it seemingly belongs to you.
They have to replace.
See, so who's got the achrayus on it? Is that the law? So then it could be, if it doesn't belong to you and they have the achrayus on it, then it could be it doesn't belong to you yet, and you can tell the non-Jew, put it down wherever you like.
It does belong to you. They've indemnified it, the fact that it's delivered to you properly. It does belong to you.
You have a 14-day cancellation period as well.
That's all right. You can always undo a sale. That's to undo the sale.
Do you own it still? Do you own it until 14 days? Or do you say you don't own it?
No, I think it's yours, but you can cancel it. Yeah. They're not so Lomdish. This is out of my depth out here. Yeah.
Once it comes into your driveway, is that the wall? Before you invite them, isn't it within your
issue? Are there three walls around him? If there's not three walls around him, if there's an Eruv, and even those that don't hold of the Eruv probably would hold of the Eruv for the non-Jew, then there's an Eruv and then there's no Malacha in a place where there's no Eruv. So in Edgeware, you've got an Eruv, I'm sure everybody could rely on it to tell the non-Jew to put it down. That's an important point. Okay. Now says carries on the Ramah, the chain enim Yehudim ha'osim gevinus b'shabbos. The goyim are making cheese, and the problem is you have to watch the milking process. But Yisrael roeh v'yikno samimenu. So now the Jew, he wants this goy to make him some cheese. So he needs to oversee the milking process to have be shown with milk. And he also has his interest at heart because he's now going to get it. He's going to buy it, or he's or the goy's going to give it to him for some debt. Is that mutter, or is it forbidden under the business activities that you're watching business? Because you have a vested interest, because you want to have the milk, you want to have the cheese. So is that considered watching your own business? You're not allowed to watch your own business on Sabbath. You're not allowed to supervise your business. So the Rama says, "De mikol makom ha'eini Yehudi adaita de nafsheka ovid." At the end of the day, the non-Jew's doing it for himself. It's a non-Jew's business. It's a non-Jew's cows. It's a non-Jew's milk. The fact that you're watching it doesn't mean it's your business. You want to be able to get this milk. You want to be able to get this cheese. So you're watching it, and now it's kosher milk and kosher cheese. But that doesn't mean it's your business. So the Ramah's lenient and says that you can watch it on Shabbos. Even though you've been there a month or 2 months supervising, and even though the non-Jews are doing it with the intention to sell to Jews, sorry, it's mutter. It's not called your business. And technically the non-Jew can sell it to whoever they like, even though they know the Jew's going to buy it, but they can really sell it to whoever they like. Just because you're watching it doesn't mean it's the Jews. So therefore you're allowed to supervise that. Okay, Simen Shin Ches. The Mishnah Brura, this is where it deals with Muktzah. And the Mishnah Brura gives a Hakdama to understanding all the Klolim of Muktzah. I think now he's about to introduce six Klolim of Muktzah. But first of all, the Mishnah Brura explains why Chazal made anything called Muktzah in the first place. Why did they come up with such a thing? You know, we've been dealing with a Daber Dovah, it's a sanctity of Shabbos, don't do business, but why did they decree on Muktzah? So the Mishnah Brura says, "Hinei kodem shenivoyah simen zeh aktim pesicha ketana." I'm going to give you a small introduction. "Hinei isa tiltol muksa shegadu chazal kosav haramba besov perichof dalad v'seh l'shoinu." Says the Rambam, "Osru chachomel l'taltel mixes devarim b'shabbat kideru she'oise b'chol." Chazal didn't want you to move certain things on Shabbos like you do in the week. "Umipnei ma nagu b'isa zeh." Why did they make such an isa? Omru, they said, if Yeshaya said, don't walk on Shabbos like you walk in the weekday, and your speech on Shabbos should be different to your weekday speech, if that's only with regards to something, it's not a ma'isa, how much more so with a ma'isa of moving objects should we be careful that we move our objects in a Shabbos dicker way rather than a weekday way. So what will be the offshoot? Because Chazal made a thing called Muktzah, then you're going to be careful from the following situation. Because if they didn't say Muktzah, you're going to start moving things around the house. Because everybody knows the famous question, how is it that I can't carry a handkerchief from my outside to the inside, and I can carry sofas all around the house, I can move my equipment and everything, anything that's not muktzah, I can move about. So how can that be? So, Taka, it's true, seemingly you can do it, so, but Chazal said that's not the spirit of Shabbos, so therefore they made something called muktzah, and you shouldn't be moving things around. And you shouldn't be moving stones on Shabbos, something worthless. Sharehu bottle, the Yoshev Beveso, the Vakish Dovishi Sasebo, an unbelievable statement of the Rambam. You're bored on Shabbos, there's nothing to do, so you're going to be start moving your furniture around. Benimsa Shalosh Shovas, therefore it will turn out you didn't rest. Ubot Latam, Shinema Batora, and the Torah says, Leman Yonuach, in order that you should rest. But oh, the Rambam says another reason. So we can understand, Chazal were worried that if you move pens around, you might start writing on Shabbos. That's a regular gezeira. And certain people don't have jobs at all. Kugon hatayolim, the Yoshvei Koronos, people that just sit on the corners, Shekol yemei hem heim shovsim memlocha. Every day is like Shabbos for them. Such a madriga. Every day is like Shabbos. They don't do anything. So if they would be able to move things about like rest of the week, it would turn out there's no hakora, there's no recognizable difference between Shabbos and the weekday. So for these reasons, you can only move things that are stressed. But arrived not in time. The rabbi gave another reason. The rabbi says the reason why they said tiltul muksa is that you shouldn't come to carry, because if you're moving things about without any limitations, you may come to carry. Shouldn't your base? So there's five simonim on this. There's four chalokim. A person's particular about a certain implement that it shouldn't get damaged. So the cases of the Shulchan Aruch, let's say a sofa's pen. What's it called? A quill. He's very particular, it shouldn't get damaged. Or a mohel's knife. Things that are very important and very choshev that they shouldn't get damaged. That's called muksa machmas chisor and kis. Chelik sheni, dova sheni kli, velo meichel odom, velo meichel behemokim, avonim vekonim, or mois, veitzim, vekos, veof, vechol, or meis, valichaim, vekorogos, vesmukim, shemunochim, bemokim, shemispaishim, vechol, giz, vezente, lo chosi, mikri muksa machmas gufo. There's something called muksa machmas gufo. It is intrinsically muksa. It's intrinsically pointless. Money, stones, beams of wood. They've got no use on Shabbos. Therefore, they are muksa. Something, the famous case of a hammer. The klishim lachto le'isa. A hammer is usually used for building, but you can use it on Shabbos to open your nuts. Chelik revi, klishim lachto le'heta. Now here's an important thing. There's something called klishim lachto le'heta, something that people don't necessarily know about. Klishim lachto le'heta is your bottle of water or something. It's something that is permissible, and it's still in the realm of muksa. Which means, Chazal said, you can move it to protect it for a purpose. If it's going to be stolen, you can move it inside. But you can't just start playing with things on Shabbos. You know, if you've got a bottle of water, you shouldn't just be moving it for no reason whatsoever. Just swinging it in your hand for some reason. No, forks are different. Cutlery, they didn't give decree on that. You'll get go weiter in it. You'll see it all. Okay, and v'yesh o shnei chalokim muksa, the fifth and the sixth, echot dova shahoya bein hashmoshes mechuba u'mechus ha-seida. Okay, something that you have to do a melacha with to catch it, let's say an animal that you need to catch, or apples that were on a tree, they are muksa. Shein, and another one, muksa machmas mitzvah. This always happens on Sukkot. The first night of Sukkot, the children have put up all the decorations. It's all very nice. And by the end of the meal, they've all fallen on the floor. They are muksa machmas mitzvah. They're associated with a mitzvah, and they're muksa, or an esrog, let's say, on Shabbos. No, not an esrog on Shabbos. Take that back. That's not muksa machmas mitzvah, because there's no mitzvah on Shabbos. But, okay. So things that have a mitzvah are muksa machmas mitzvah, and they are the six klolim of muksa. Mi'ez Hashem, you'll go through with them.